Welcome back or welcome to the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and in this episode, I'm joined by Meredith Cass, the founder CEO of Nyx Biosensors, to talk about the self-health movement, the latest technology behind hydration intelligence, and the prospect of completely automating your hydration strategy and execution at an ultra trail race like the Western States 100. One thing to note before we get started, Singletrack has no financial partnership with Nyx and does not receive any kickbacks in this scenario, but if you are interested in trying out their products after listening to what Meredith has to say, we have created a discount code for you to use that is Singletrack15. You can use it at checkout on their website for 15% off your order there. With that, let's get into it. Meredith Cass, it is great to have you on the Singletrack Podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. And I am excited to talk all things self-health and hydration intelligence and personalized hydration management. I think I'm kind of chuckling to myself because a few months ago when I saw your booth at TRE, these were totally brand new terms to me. But yeah. Since then, I've kind of gathered that you've got the first biosensor on the market to analyze sweat and deliver all this like personalized athlete data in real time in the field. And, you know, just to kind of like level set with our audience, I think the potential here is amazing because especially in our sport, like we have races like Western States where if you can hydrate more accurately across, you know, various temperatures and intensities and kind of take that risk factor and like mental energy out of the equation to kind of stay on top of that part of your race day. I'm just like kind of brimming with excitement. So as you can imagine, very excited to chat today.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for having me. And yeah, I mean, I myself am more of a road racer at the marathon distance, but yeah, we've heard so often that like that makes or breaks your race. If you're especially in the trail and ultra community is how you're fueling and how you're hydrating. If you can get it on point, you're going to probably have a better day. Mm. And if you, for whatever reason, can't, it could be catastrophic for you.
I kind of want to start the conversation on philosophical terms, including Nyx. We have new ways to access and understand and act on our personal biology in real time, like this whole concept of self-health, I should say, not self-help. You think this is a good thing and that this should be more accessible outside a formal healthcare setting. So sort of, if you don't mind, reflect on that philosophy for a moment and kind of talk about the pros and cons of being so in touch with your body's data and not having to like go to the doctor as much to make healthcare decisions.
Yeah, I could not underemphasize how important I think this is. And career-wise, I do come from the healthcare side of the world. So I've spent, I went to business school here in Boston at Harvard and then went straight into venture capital in early stage biotech and yeah. Med device and med diagnostics and things like that. So I've unfortunately had what feels like a front row seat to all of the dysfunction in our healthcare system for many decades. And at the end of the day, just without getting too high up on my soapbox here about our healthcare system, just the way that it was originally constructed was really built around preventing death and preventing illness. It's not really built around promoting health and wellness. Mm. And so that's where I kind of get on the soapbox about, you know, who's going to have greater motivation to manage their health and wellness than the individual themselves. And if we're going to empower that individual to stay healthy and to be proactively healthy and not just engage with a traditional setting of healthcare, like, you know, your doctor's office or an emergency room, for example, in those episodic, you know, moments of illness, then we've got to empower those individuals with data on which to make those health and wellness decisions. So for me, it goes way beyond hydration, and we'll come back to that. But like for Nyx as a company, I mean, the vision is so much bigger and more lofty than just about managing hydration. It's also about how do we manage our vitamin D levels without having to go get a blood draw at the doctor's office? How do we make sure our hormone levels are where they're supposed to be, whether that's male or female? How do we make sure that our nutrition is on point? There's so many topics that we would love to be managing on our own, independently, at home, you know, on a day-to-day basis to keep our health and wellness optimized, as opposed to just going to the doctor when we've fallen short or gotten sick. And so that's really where that whole vision comes from.
Yeah. And I apologize in advance if I confuse any of the terminology in this category. So please correct me where I kind of error. But when I think about biosensors and I think about wearables and everything else in that category, being presented the data is one thing, and that's an amazing gift. But then there's sort of that last mile effort to not just have the data, but be able to accurately interpret and act on it. So if you don't mind, talk about sort of, especially with NICS, working backward from the standpoint of like accurate data and meaningful metrics versus stuff that's more like vanity based and building something that like could or might be beneficial, but it's not rooted in that intention.
Oh gosh, we could take this part of the conversation in so many different directions. At the core of it, I mean, if I'm sort of thinking about, you know, all of the different things that we think about wearables, bio-wearables, and biosensing is actually three different kind of categories, really predicated on the kind of data that that it's measuring and pulling and analyzing. Yeah. So when I think about biosensing, I'm thinking specifically about molecular biomarkers and electrochemical biomarkers that maybe are very akin to what you would see in a traditional setting of care, like a urine test or a blood test or something like that. Obviously, those are not samples that are quite as convenient when you're thinking about biometric data at home, which is why we're looking at sweat and other non-invasive samples. But I do think there's a really meaningful difference between sort of more on the accuracy side and validity side of, you know, are we using true molecular and electrochemical markers as opposed to what I think of more as like digital biomarkers, like, you know, things that we sense typically through like an optical based sensing method. So I bring that up because to do biosensing, quote unquote, right, and forgive me, I am injecting a little bit of healthcare snobbery perhaps into this conversation, but to do biosensing right, you can't just use a digital biomarker. And it means that you've got to have greater collaboration between hardware and electrical engineering and expertise and physiology or medical expertise. And not every company or innovator has the opportunity to do that. That collaboration is hard. You're crossing over different disciplines. It's also why building a biosensor takes a long time. And it, you know, you've got to validate it. You've got to build it and bring all these different areas of expertise together. But when you do it and you've taken the time to do it right, which we hope and think that we have at NICS, where you can get to is insights that you deliver to that end user that are so simple and so, you know, reductive in the sense that like the advice we can give from our hydration sensor is like, drink 16 ounces of scratch now. Like it could not be more actionable and simple and action-based. But it's because we took all the time to do all of the incredibly complex analytics that led us up to that really simple recommendation. And I really think that makes all the difference.
This was one of the things when I came to the booth and saw that hydration beverage chart, for example, I was blown away because I think, you know, a lot of devices out there, the feedback is static, the calculations are pretty generalized, and here's NICS with like super dynamic, personalized feedback. It's pretty amazing.
Well, I really appreciate that. I do think that that's a data point that a lot of our users are pretty blown away by. And it's funny when we think about, you know, nutrition labels are publicly available. We can all read them off, whatever hydration formulations we prefer. I do prefer Scratch personally, which is why I mentioned it. We're obviously, we don't partner exclusively with Scratch or anything in any way. Yeah. In fact, that's very important to us that we remain completely brand agnostic in that respect. So our goal is really about like, let's go out and get Finn's data right off Finn's body and feed back to Finn what his sweat composition is and how to, you know, inform his best workout.
Quick break to thank NAC, the official nutrition partner of Singletrack, for supporting this episode. Hydration management for ultra endurance events might be top of mind for you while listening to this particular conversation, and NAC has you covered. Personally, my go-to product in their lineup is their Watermelon Ultra Energy Drink Mix. It's fast and it's easy to ingest, and it's got all the nutrients you need specifically for an ultra marathon as the first drink mix that provides complete proteins and BCAAs at optimized levels for longer-term efforts, which fight against degradation of muscle fibers during long and intense physical activity. Pretty awesome. check it out at naak.com. That's spelled NAAK.com. And if you end up purchasing some product, feel free to use code SINGLETRACK15 at checkout for 15% off your purchase. With that, let's get back to the conversation with Meredith Cass. You're going to laugh at me because I'm getting old, but I still come from an era where, like, when my coaches and I were thinking about hydration, the directive was like drink to thirst. And beyond that, in terms of monitoring, it was like do weigh-ins pre and post practice, check your urine color, all of that kind of stuff. And this is something I've learned in my research, like hydration can't really be solved by intuition. So talk about that more.
Yeah. And it seems archaic now to be thinking about things like that, right? Thirst and urine color but it's all we've had. We've known for decades. And when I say we, I mean, you know, the research community has known for decades the consequences of like a fluid deficit. I think we're getting a finer point now on the consequences of an electrolyte deficit. I think the reason that's lagged behind is honestly, it's been really difficult to measure electrolyte losses outside of a lab. And so the research has just lagged a little bit there until recently. But yeah, man, it's substantive. Like if you're going to experience one of those deficits, your performance is going to suffer physically, cognitively. It's really meaningful. And it's tempting to think that there are experts or athletes of a certain caliber or a certain level of competition that have access to insights and tools that I'll say for me, like I'm a solid middle of the pack runner. I am not a podium chaser or an age grouper over here, but, it's tempting to think that there are resources or athletes, again, of a certain level that have these resources that are more sophisticated than what color is your urine or how thirsty are you? And the reality is they don't. And all you have to do is like watch, different events. I mean, I always think back to, we have a relationship with Shalane Flanagan, so big, big fan. And think back to like the Olympic trials in 2016 in LA, where she barely, you know, she practically collapsed at the finish line. Talking like world-class athletes that don't have any better tools than we do. So I think the real kicker is, especially when we're thinking about thirst, is more often than not, your thirst is going to be plenty to prevent you from dying, which is probably the most critical function. But there are a lot of studies now, including out of the Army, has done a ton of environmental research and soldier safety research, demonstrating very consistently and clearly that your sense of thirst is only going to prompt you to replenish about half of the fluids that you've lost. So, you know, if you're doing a short workout or you're an athlete in a, you know, a shorter event, and you're losing 20 ounces, that 10 ounce deficit may not impact you that much. Yeah. But if you're an endurance athlete and your event is, you know, whether you're marathon or above, right, you're out there for 2, 6, 8, 20 hours, that 50% fluid deficit, you better believe, is really substantive.
And when I think about the merits of outsourcing decision-making to a patch like the Nyx biosensor, one of the other stats that really stuck out to me was like performance impairment in a dehydrated state begins before you're even like consciously aware of what's happening.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. So the generally accepted threshold in the literature for where you're going to see a physical or cognitive performance impairment is at about 2% of your body mass lost. Wow. So put it differently, if you're a 150-pound person, if you lose 3 pounds of sweat, that is by definition 2% dehydrated. And that can happen quickly. So depending on, you know, certainly, you know, your own personal chemistry and your sweat rate, but also depending on the intensity of your workout, the environment that you're operating in, what gear you're wearing, you know, are you going uphill? Are you in radiant sun? These are all factors that are going to change your sweat rate. You can get to that threshold in as little as like 45 minutes, depending on how, you know, how intense that sweat rate is. So if you're not quantifying it or you're not really on top of it, those consequences can take place, certainly before you're really thinking about it strategically, but before you're even feeling symptoms of thirst or fatigue.
Talk before we get into like a few other questions I have about like interpreting the data and whatnot. Just talk for a moment about like how the patch works, what it communicates in real time, the biomarkers in the sweat that are being measured, stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was first and foremost really important to us that we made something completely non-invasive. And we are looking at sweat. That is the sample that we're sampling here. So the patch basically seals off a small portion, about 2.5 inches in diameter on the skin. It's sort of wicking that sweat through a flow path in the patch. And taking measurements inside that flow path, specifically looking at electrolyte content. So we're looking at like the salinity of the sweat. We're looking at all electrolytes. Sodium obviously is critically important, but we think other electrolytes are also important. So we are looking at a full array of all of those electrolytes, sodium, potassium, chloride, magnesium, etc. And we're using that data to also then understand how quickly the sweat rate is taking place. Again, that patch is placed usually on the arm. So we're taking that local sweat rate, local electrolyte loss rate. We're sort of aggregating those losses over the course of the workout and extrapolating that to the full surface area of the body. So we're using the athlete's height and weight to figure out that surface area calculation. We're doing a sort of multi-regression, if you will, over different sites of the body because we don't sweat the same way at different sites on the body. We sweat differently on the arm, for example, than we do on the chest or the back. So we take all of that into account. We're also actually now adding in respiratory losses, which depending on the athlete can be up to 11 or 12 ounces an hour just through your exhaled breath. So that's really substantive. And then we package that all together in a really simple interface so that it will just say, you know, you've lost 16 ounces, 18 ounces, 24 ounces to make that really, really intuitive for you.
How much data do you need from the patch, like over the course of XYZ runs to start refining your hydration plan?
I think it depends on your needs and your preferences. So, you know, you most often than not, we're seeing athletes probably want to log somewhere between 4 and 8 workouts at a minimum to start to hone in on kind of like where is their norm. Now, when I say 4 to 8 at a minimum, we're talking in one singular environment. So the key is most of us that are out there training for something, especially in running, I mean, we have other sports which are mostly practiced indoors. We're out there in the elements and we're out there, you know, with elevation changes and we're out there with different environmental conditions. So, the real key here, and most of our athletes, I would say are opting for like, you know, bringing into like a full training pack where they're going to use it, let's say every long run leading up to race day, as the weather is changing, as they're getting heat acclimatized, or as they're, you know, potentially training at elevation, whatever their course of training may look like. So that by race day, they've now started to really understand, well, what does it look like for me when it's 32 degrees and overcast versus when it's 78 degrees and direct sunlight and high humidity? Because you're going to find an enormous variation, even for one athlete, in those different circumstances.
Yeah, that, I think, is it called the Nix Index? Sort of,
yeah, how you can factor
environmental conditions. That blows me. Talk more about that, because I think there's a lot of people who listen to this. There's a race, again, I mentioned earlier, the Western States 100, where hydration management is so important. Heat management is so important. And yeah, like I just, the use case for this patch to work backward from that event is so valuable, I think.
Yeah. And everything you just said is exactly why we created this concept of the Nix Index. So we think of the Nix Index as a composite weather index, composite in the sense that, like, similar to heat index or wind chill, we're actually taking multiple environmental elements and compiling them into a single number. So we take 6 in the Nix index. It's temperature, humidity, dew point, wind speed, cloud cover, and altitude, all of which have a huge direct impact on sweat rate and thermoregulation. We take all of those numbers together. We put it on kind of a 1 to 100 scale, because we figure that's a lot more intuitive for people, like, you know, a Nix index of 27 versus a Nix index of 73. If you know the full scale only goes up to 100, that can give you a relative sense of extremity of the environment. And we basically use it as sort of a predictor, if you will, of your thermoregulatory potential on that day. Or in other words, how heavy might I sweat today when the Nix index is high versus when the Nix index is low. And so as you're logging workouts in the platform, we're taking those sweat rates and those electrolyte loss rates, and we're plotting them based on the Nix index. So you can see very clearly the correlation between, for every single digit increase in NICS index, let's say from 67 to 68, how much higher does your sweat rate or your electrolyte loss rate jump based on that 1 point increase?
Wow. Yeah. Our version of running, like the trail running space, from like a professional standpoint, it's still relatively young. Like it's increasing in sophistication by the day, but like the professional end of the sport, where I can see a lot of people who are listening probably nerding out on what you just said and getting excited about what you just said.
Yeah.
Like a lot of them pre-race will go to the event course and they'll train on it and they'll sort of acclimatize that way. But again, like speaking more towards the audience, like to go to those locations pre-race to train on the course, not just for your legs and, you know, with all your equipment, but to like wear that NICS patch at the same time, log that historical data, and then hopefully, you know, you can port that into what you might need to do on race day. This is just amazing.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun too, I'll say, like, for example, for our data science team to be thinking about, like, we're almost empowering each athlete to build their kind of like personalized database, if you will, as they're logging each of these workouts, so that when it does come to race day, we can start to think about extrapolating or interpolating what their fluid and electrolyte needs are going to be on that day, on that course, in that forecasted environment, to really be able to dial in their needs.
And then are you encouraging users to incorporate this patch into as many types of runs as possible to kind of fill out your profile over time? Or are there certain types that you encourage over others? Talk about that.
We definitely at a base case would say that it should be part of your long run practice. Okay. You know, if we think about long runs as kind of your dress rehearsal for race day, I mean, that is without question the most important workout to incorporate it into. But we definitely see our users using patches in all kinds of workouts. I mean, if for no other reason than to be able to, in a similar environmental condition, especially comparing the sweat rate produced in a long run versus the sweat weight produced in, like, let's say a tempo run or even a, you know, speed work or whatever the case might be, you're going to see really substantive differences between the two. And I think any of those additional data points can help you just understand your body a little bit better. I'll use a cycling example just to illustrate a particular point, is we've had athletes put in the exact same workout, let's say on like the Zwift platform, exact same workout, exact same power output on two back-to-back days indoors in the exact same environment, and have up to a 25% difference in their sweat rate on those 2 days. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, what accounts for that?
It's all these other factors that science hasn't really been able to tailor yet. And it includes caffeine consumption. It might include your starting hydration status. It might include, for women, it can be things like their menstrual cycle, you know, kind of where they are in that cycle. Are you sick? Was your core body temperature elevated on a given day for any myriad reasons that made you then, you know, at the end of the day, we all know thermoregulation is driven by our core body temperature. So if your core body temperature is altered for any other reason, that will impact your sweat rate on that day as well.
Well, I know from talking with, it might've been someone from your marketing team at the TRE booth, that the battery life on a single patch is like in the neighborhood of 24 to 36 hours. Just based on what you said there, it makes me wonder, like, is there any value in wearing the patch just for an entire day before and after the workout too, to get those like sedentary data points where you're more at rest or you're even sleeping, to see if like there's anything pre or post run that could be clearly impacting that?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that's the direction that hydration sensing is going. Our patch in particular is more sweat driven. So we need a minimum of 4.5 microliters of sweat to be able to get those readings. That kind of sweat can be produced even at a really, really low intensity or even in really cold conditions. But for now, it is something where, you know, we do need at least some sweat production to be getting those measurements.
And this, it also reminds me, and this is more like an integrations question, but over time, is there going to be more and more value to, like, I guess the word would be like triangulating this data with other sensors on your body, like a core temperature sensor or a continuous glucose monitor or a ring, stuff like that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the beautiful thing is now with our integrations getting under our belt, that's something that we're finally getting to start to overlay those different pieces of data. The obvious overlayment that we want to examine is, you know, we already know that when there's a fluid deficit, there's a performance impairment. So being able to actually overlay that data in real time of, you know, when your hydration is good or when your hydration has fallen off, how do we now see that in terms of other intensity metrics? It could even be heart rate or VO2 max or other metrics of power or intensity of the workout. But starting to think about how that overlays with other things, like, you know, to your point a moment ago, is your sweat rate different on this day because you didn't sleep as well last night, or because you weren't fully recovered from yesterday's workout, or whatever the case may be. So I think once you have all that data integrated, the sky's just the limit in terms of the insights you can pull out. And so even the interest in being able to overlay those different data streams is driving a lot of our integration strategy right now and the different platforms that we're integrating data with.
Yeah. Like, are you able to see in the data differences between like sweat losses and respiratory losses?
Definitely. Yep.
Okay. Cool.
Yep. Which is incredibly insightful. And, you know, we know even just from the literature on a more theoretical level, we know what drives each, you know, sweat rate versus respiratory losses in terms of intensities of workouts and, you know, kind of what drives core body temperature, you know, higher than other factors. But to be able to break that down and see kind of where does that hit in the workout? I mean, I can't tell you how many athletes or their coaches usually that have reached out to us and say, you know, athlete so-and-so on my team, you know, hits the wall at, you know, a consistent, you know, let's say 18 miles into their workout, and we just don't know why. And our product can actually help figure out what's happening at that point in time. Is it a fluid deficit that they've accumulated? Is it a electrolyte deficit that they've accumulated? Or is it just the heat and the fatigue that can come just from heat? Because that's the crazy thing about hydration is each of those different pillars are mutually exclusive. You can be well hydrated, but still be succumbing to the heat. Or you can be properly hydrated, but have an electrolyte deficit that you're suffering from. Or your core body temperature could be right where it needs to be and be healthy, and your electrolytes could still be on point and you've replenished all your electrolytes, but there's a fluid deficit in play. And so that's what makes it hard, is like this fatigue, this general sort of like malaise that you're going to feel when you're kind of hitting the wall, so to speak. It's going to feel the same regardless of which of these three events is taking place. Perhaps even more scary is if you are overhydrated and you are hyponatremic, you're going to feel similarly fatigued and thirsty in the way that you will if you're dehydrated. And so our philosophy has always just been, if you could have objective data to tell you which of these issues you're dealing with and which of these issues is holding you back, you could make an enormous, and we're not talking like edging out a little 2-3% performance edge. We're talking like 20-30% performance impairments when one of these things goes off the rails. You can use this product as like a almost an insurance policy, honestly, that on a given workout, you're not going to have that issue.
I don't want to say this is a limitation, and I could be wrong here, but like one thing I'm thinking about as a potential user of this product is like, the patch will make an interpretation for you in the sense that it will say like, drink 16 ounces of this NAC concoction to get back to this level of hydration. But what about like if somebody is trying to get to the bottom of an issue like muscle cramping, which a lot of people will say like the source of that can be multifactorial. How do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, in the same way that we can sort of understand, like, for example, and I'll just kind of use examples of the data that come from the app. If your sweat composition is a 93 milligram per ounce composition, and what that literally means is that in 1 ounce of your sweat, we're going to see 93 milligrams of electrolytes on that per ounce basis. For me personally, my sweat composition is more like 42, 43, so about half that number. And that's a completely normal, you know, sort of representation that we would see in the human dynamic range, is we can see people be twice as salty sweaters as other people. So what that number then can tell you is what is the right composition of the beverage that is best suited for you. And so we have a whole chart in there in the app that will say, you know, if you're at a 43, maybe it is scratch or liquid IV or, you know, it might be a brand that you do like, it might be a brand that you don't. But what we can also do then is if you're loyal to NAC because it's the formulation that works best with your GI tract, it's tried and true, or maybe you're sponsored, we can give you the product to water ratio so that you can actually create the formulation of that product that matches your sweat composition.
I'm just trying to think of questions that coaches out in the audience and athletes out in the audience might be thinking of. How about like when you're looking at the data from the patch on the app on your phone or in your watch, are you like from like an electrolyte profile, are you getting pretty granular into that category? Is it sort of a general reading? How does that work?
Yeah. So right now when we're reporting electrolytes, we're doing it in aggregate, which means when I say, for example, you're losing 100 milligrams of electrolytes per ounce, for example, if that's the number that we're using, when we say 100 milligrams, we mean of all electrolytes together. So that's sodium plus potassium plus chloride plus magnesium, et cetera. The reason we do it that way is because when you look in the literature, most of the time they're looking at sweat osmolality in aggregate. They're looking at all of that concentration of electrolytes in aggregate. Certainly we know with our athletes that are traveling farther distances and are out on the trails or on the roads longer, sodium is the electrolyte that's of the most interest. And that's just simply because on average, there's quite a range of variability, but on average, sodium is comprising 47% of our electrolyte losses. So again, if we say, you know, 100 milligrams of electrolytes in the NYX app, we're talking about 47% of those being sodium. So we do, you know, we haven't, when we launched the product, we didn't really drill directly down to sodium right off the bat because we wanted to at least create a more holistic picture because there are definitely nutritionists and athletes and others out there that are asking us specifically about potassium or specifically about magnesium. So we didn't want to just hone in on sodium and neglect the other electrolytes. But we are now starting to get more explicit about adding that back in because we know when you're talking about surviving a much longer endurance event, sodium really is the electrolyte you're most concerned with.
Generally speaking, talk about the accuracy of the recommendations that the patch makes. And also like in your opinion, because I have to imagine there has to be some error rate. What do you see as like an acceptable level of inaccuracy or a tolerable error rate in like a in the field athletic context?
Yeah, this is such an important question. And we do think about the accuracy of fluid losses a little bit separately from how we think about the accuracy of electrolyte losses. And that's partly because of the risk profile of each. So at the end of the day, if your electrolytes are off, you could certainly experience a performance impairment, but you're not really likely to experience any kind of serious injury or adverse event, as you absolutely could if you were dehydrated or overhydrated. So we take those a little bit separately, but at the end of the day, the fluid accuracy is at about 83%. So that means give or take 17% error in the plus or minus direction. We tend to underpredict. That is on purpose. We trained our algorithms because if we're telling you to drink a certain volume of fluids, we would rather you underconsume than overconsume. That's just a safety play. What it also means is that 17% error, when we actually plot that as a percentage of body mass error, which again, if we remember back, it's that 2% threshold of your body mass loss is what we would call your dehydration status. So 2% dehydration is where you're going to start to see that performance impairment. That error profile that our initial studies produced was actually within 1% of body mass for that athlete. So that means we are well within that threshold where that athlete would start to see a performance impairment. And so that to us felt like an appropriate range to start. You know, does 83% accurate sound high or low? I think that depends maybe on who you are. We think about like nutrition labels, the FDA only even requires you to be 80% accurate. So no nutrition label is actually more than 80% accurate. We think about that as sort of mind-blowing for me. Most wearables out there are in the 65 to 73% accuracy range. So to us, this 83% range felt really acceptable for, you know, a brand new product in a new category.
That makes sense to me. And with that error rate, are you distinguishing between the data that's being reported and the recommendations that the app is making from that data, or is that all brought together?
it's comparing the data from the app to the what we would call the ground truth data. So in the case of fluid losses, it would be your weigh-ins is the ground truth. You weigh yourself before and after. We would be within, you know, that 83% accuracy of that ground truth number.
Also, thanks to Rabbit, the official apparel partner of Singletrack. If you're listening to this in mid-March of 2024, spring is basically here, and that means you're probably switching out your running wardrobe. And my question to you is, are you covered for the warmer temps? I have personally already started to get some runs here lately in the Salt Lake area in t-shirt and shorts. One piece of gear I've been turning to is Rabbit's Speedster X Running Tight. It's super lightweight and quick drying. It's made with materials that fight bacteria and eliminate odor, and it's got two side stash pockets that fit my phone and nutrition with no bounds. The other is Rabbit's Switchback Tee. I love this for many reasons, including the colorways and its semi-relaxed fit that provides this, I call it like a cling-free performance. It's awesome. Anyways, for listeners of the podcast, we have a discount for you. Feel free to use code SINGLETRACK20 at checkout for 20% off your next order. And with that, let's get back to the conversation with Meredith Cass. Another scenario I'm thinking of is like, well, for example, you know, we're recording in March. I'm based in Salt Lake City. It's pretty cold here today. We've had some days that are like 0 degrees. In the summertime, I mentioned Western States earlier, that race can get up to 108 degrees in some years in the canyons.
Yeah.
Are there any complications with this patch that come from using it in like pretty wild temperature swing environments, or does it tend to perform regardless?
Thankfully, no. We've trained our algorithms to be temperature agnostic. So we do what we call a temperature normalization. We are taking into account whether the temperature is high or low, and we are adjusting our measurements based on that. Very specifically, the measurement that we're taking in the sweat is like an impedance measurement of the sweat itself. That's how we get the salinity measure. That measurement in and of itself is temperature sensitive. So we're taking that local temperature, we're normalizing it and normalizing the impedance value based on that temperature. But when we trained our algorithms in that respect, we did a huge temperature sweep because we didn't want there to be a restriction on the environmental conditions where our sensor would be, you know, accurate and functioning properly. So the short answer is, I mean, again, whether it's I'm here in Boston and it's cold and overcast here too, whether it's, you know, freezing temperatures or, you know, over 100 some odd degrees, it won't make a difference in the accuracy of the patch. It's just measuring what's coming off the body in that moment.
Maybe one more question for the data nerds out there, but like, do you have any, like if you go to like the NICS website, do you guys have like publicly available validation research for the patch?
We do. And we knew how important that would be, especially in a segment like the endurance athlete segment. Keeping in mind too, that even beyond endurance, NICS is operating with different branches of the military and special operations. We work with firefighters and postal delivery. We work with professional sports teams, things like that. So yes, we knew how important it would be to have a really important summary of our validation data on our website. So if you go to nixbiosensors.com, there's a research and development section there. It'll go through not only our validation data, but also some case studies that we're starting to publish as we're doing more and more pilots with professional cycling to professional football, military, you know, NASCAR, kind of goes on and on.
Maybe the last thing I want to cover is coming back to that hydration beverage chart, because in addition to the treadmill setup that you had at TRE, I thought that this chart was incredibly impactful. And my mind tends to think in marketing terms. And when I saw this chart and I saw sort of like the list of, you know, sweat composition profiles and mapping those profiles to all of the electrolyte brands that are out there on the market, I was like, wow, like once we get to a point in society where enough of like sort of like the general consumer base is in touch with these data points, they'll start to buy products based on like alignment with those sweat composition profiles. That like blew me away. How are you thinking about that? Like in the role that NICS might play in like changing the way that consumers purchase products and how brands market to those consumers?
I mean, isn't that the most brilliant thing to think that like we could all be tailoring our purchasing decisions based on our very specific personalized needs? I mean, I think I wish we could say that we have been a force in pushing that trend forward. The reality is personalization has been going on for a long time. But I think that the fact that we've been able to take a piece of biometric data and marry it up with data that was already available, for example, the nutrition facts on all of these hydration formulations, none of us just had any personal data upon which to make those purchasing decisions in the past. We just simply didn't have our sweat composition data. So we're pretty excited that this is something that, you know, people can now really hone in on what's appropriate for them. And what I'm really proud of our team for is that we have remained completely agnostic in this process. I mean, the human dynamic range of composition of sweat is absolutely enormous. And the products on the market span that whole range. So we don't have to align with any one brand and compromise the integrity of our data to be a helpful and insightful product. We can point you toward the specific product that's right for you, or tell you how to mix that product, again, that product to water ratio, that powder to water ratio, to make your favorite product work best for you. And that I just think is honestly the direction the whole world is going. My time in healthcare, especially, everything is about personalization now.
Yeah. And I know that this chart exists on the Nyx website. So for those that are interested in diving in and connecting the dots, we will link to that in the show notes. It's a pretty powerful page, and I encourage you to check it out. Again, maybe one more thing about sort of the future of hydration. Is this Nyx biosensor patch, do you foresee that it's going to remove the need for athletes to go into a lab setting to take a sweat test, or is there still a reason to go and do that in addition?
I think there's a time and place for both. I mean, especially if you're competing and training at an exceptionally high level, that, you know, that 17% error profile that we were talking about before, maybe that's not tolerable for you. Or maybe you've already done that formal sweat test and you just want more of that granular data on a day by day or week by week basis to kind of inform those changes, you know, after all, and sort of throughout. So I really think there's a time and place for both. You know, we've had so many athletes that have done these lab-based formal sweat tests, many of which, by the way, are not producing sweat actively. Sometimes that sweat is produced pharmacologically, which is not necessarily the same sweat profile as when it's driven by your actual increase in core body temperature and your thermoregulatory response. So I really think there's a time and place for both, where, you know, there's always been a compromise for miniaturization and, you know, this sort of concept of a lab on your skin or a lab to go. Of course, there's going to be a trade-off for that.
Few final miscellaneous questions. I think the first one, I have to imagine there's a lot of interesting research being done in the sweat science arena, and you're probably thinking of ways that this sort of forthcoming research can be incorporated into what you're doing at Nyx. What is most exciting you in this arena right now?
Honestly, the fact that we get to interface with researchers at that level. I mean, commercially, of course, right? That's my day job, is I'm trying to commercialize this product and trying to have an impact on all these different user types. But the one piece of partnership that we really didn't foresee was how interested researchers were going to be in what we're doing, and being able themselves to think about collecting data in a more scalable way than getting people one-off into a lab. So I've been so thrilled, whether that research is with, you know, prominent, you know, sweat science researchers who we are working with, all the way to like product development researchers at, you know, footwear and apparel companies that you're all familiar with, who won't let us talk about them publicly, about, you know, thinking about how do we now use all these advancements in sweat science to better improve other processes, other products, other choices.
Is it fair to say, for listeners that are looking for a few takeaways from this episode, is it fair to say that one of the takeaways here is that if you are going to use something like a Nyx patch for an ultra trail race in the near future, you have the opportunity to totally automate your hydration strategy and your execution on race day, and that opportunity is going to be pretty accurate? Is that fair to say?
I think that is absolutely fair to say. absolutely fair to say. No endurance athlete is going to check their brain at the door when they're collecting cool data like that, and no one should. But this is, I mean, we've made it pretty foolproof to understand, like, again, where we started this whole conversation of like, I, Meredith, need to be drinking 18.6 ounces of scratch per hour. Really can't get much more simple than that.
Well, Meredith, this has been a fascinating conversation. We really appreciate you being here today and sort of explaining this new, exciting technology in the space. I'm sure there are going to be a lot of people who are excited to take action. In full disclosure, we are not partnered, but we will hopefully create some sort of discount code to leave in the show notes for people to use if they are so interested. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
Hey, before we go, we have a new partner that we will be talking about more in the coming weeks and months, and that is Delta G Ketones. You've heard me talk about and support the use of ketones in performance settings like ultramarathons many times over the last couple of years, and after roughly 6 months of research since last August, what turned me on to Delta G was that its products allow individuals to achieve deep states of ketosis safely and immediately in performance and recovery settings. For those that are wondering, ketosis is that metabolic state in which there are enough ketones in your bloodstream to use them as a primary energy source, which your brain, heart, and muscles all love to utilize. I'll have more to add in future episodes, but one of the biggest reasons I support Delta G is because it's the only product out there that gets individuals to achieve these beneficial levels of ketosis safely. If you're interested in checking out their products, I encourage you to visit deltagketones.com. And if you end up making a purchase, feel free to use code SINGLETRACK20 at checkout for 20% off your next order. See you in the next episode.